And now, Virgin Most Powerful Radio is pleased to present Hands-On Apologetics with renowned Catholic author and apologist, Gary Matuta.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome back. Hope everybody had a great weekend, and I know I did, but it's time to get back in the saddle. You know, jump right back into the thick of things. You are listening to Hands-On Apologetics, where the rubber of catechesis meets the road of everyday life. You have entered into the Virgin Most Powerful Apologetic Dojo. I'm your host, and I guess you could say sensei, kind of discussing on explain, defend the faith, and all sorts of good stuff. Like I said, it's great to be back in the saddle and be with you today. And we got a great show in store for you today. In fact, boy, our whole week is packed with guests once again. After the break, we're going to talk to one Catholic that I think has probably debated more than any other person I know. And, you know, we're all called to share and defend the faith, by the way. I mean, you're called in virtue of your baptism to witness to Christ. And for those who are confirmed, you are more strictly obligated to defend Christ both in word and in deed. So we're all called to be apologists. We're all called to be evangelists. We're all called to be defenders of the faith. And many times that might just be one-on-one. In fact, I think most apologetics occurs face-to-face, friendships, you know, sometimes through social media. And sometimes people are called to do defend the faith in a public forum. And that's what our next guest has been called to do. His name is William Albrecht. He's returning back to the dojo. He's been on a number of times. And as always with William, we have some really cool topics to discuss. And this one is, I don't think you'll find anywhere on the planet on Catholic radio talking about this topic. It's purgatory and Islam, believe it or not. So we're going to bring William on. We're going to have a great discussion on that topic. And that's coming up after the first break. And also we have our exercises, as always. And we do a finding of the fallacy because, after all, I mean, we want to sharpen our critical thinking skills and know how to spot bad arguments when they're raised. And you're going to love the name of this fallacy. The finding of the fallacy for today is the poo-poo fallacy. Yes, you heard it correctly. The poo-poo fallacy. That's actually what it's called. You got to love logicians. You know, they may seem boring. They may seem, you know, like Spock, you know, pure logic, but they also, they're creative too. So that's our fallacy for today. And the Meet the Early Church Father today actually isn't an early church father individual, but it is the Council of Elvira, which is a lesser known council, but nevertheless a very interesting council indeed, and something you should probably be aware of. So lots of interesting topics in store for you today. Like I said, not something run of the mill. So we're going to be stretching our brains and looking at things from different angles. And that's what it's all about, right, folks? So anyway, it's time for me to give my shout out to all of you watching on live stream on Facebook and YouTube. Hello, everybody. Great to see familiar names. and also, I'd like to greet everybody listening worldwide on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio app and also internet. Greetings, everyone, and also on podcast. And that's something I should mention. First off, if you have the old app, okay, if you have the old app, you want to get rid of it. You don't want the Terry and Jesse app. You want the new Virgin Most Powerful app because it's most powerful and it's being supported. And, we'll be able to get your questions and so on. There's lots of really cool features with the new app. So if you're listening on the old Terry and Jesse show app, you want to delete that, put on the new app, you know, get in line with the times. And also, I know we have lots of very interesting topics, not only on this show, but all the shows here on Virgin Most Powerful Radio. And you can access it through the virginmostpowerfulradio.org website. Just go click on shows and a pull-down menu will come. And click your favorite show and you can listen to a podcast of all the shows right here on Virgin Most Powerful. So that's a really cool feature to have, because frankly, sometimes you just don't have the leisure of sitting down and listening to an entire program, especially if this is airing around lunchtime. I know many of you have tight schedules. So anyway, if you would like to join the conversation, as always, give us a call at 888-526-2151. That's 888-526-2151. Or you can email us at questions@handsonapologetics.com. And, you know, that is the dojo mailbox. We do get questions. I do respond to questions. And sometimes we actually have it on the air. But usually what I do is I wait for a little while so we have a few of them. And then I'll take some time out in the program and we'll just do questions from the mailbox. So that's always fun. Always fun. So, again, let's jump right into our exercises, shall we? All right, finding the fallacy. Like I said, this one, of all the fallacies we went through, I think this one is probably the most aptly named fallacy. It's called the poo-poo fallacy. And, you know, the name came from kind of poo-pooing a subject. That's where it comes from. In other words, this fallacy is an informal fallacy that basically it disses an argument as unworthy of serious consideration. Okay, so it could be called a dissing fallacy if we're at liberty to rename fallacies. So the poo-poo fallacy basically won't even entertain an argument because it is unworthy of serious consideration. So it is poo-pooed out of existence. this is, like I said, a lot of these fallacies are very close to each other and somewhat interrelated. It's very close to some other rhetorical devices and fallacies that ridicule the messenger or dismisses an argument by ridiculing it, making fun of it, caricaturizing it. And the whole object is to not interact with the actual argument, but to just get it off the table. Okay. And we get a lot of poo-poo nowadays, like I said, in some centers, because I know, especially in the area of theistic apologetics, there is this occurs quite a bit, where basically there is an attempt to dismiss arguments out of hand without even any kind of serious consideration, as if it is just so absurd, why even waste your time thinking about it? So that's our fallacy for today. Yes. So don't, you know, if someone tries to poo-poo your argument, you got to call them out on it. Say, don't poo-poo my argument. If it's that bad, if it's so unworthy of consideration, challenge them and say, so it must be really easy for you to refute it. So why don't you do that for my benefit? Okay, there we go. Now, for the Meet the Early Church Father for today, it is the Council of Elvira. The Council of Elvira. Like I said, it's not one of those giant councils like Nicaea or Constantinople I or Ephesus, Trent, Vatican I, Vatican II. Those councils I think everybody has heard of at some point in their life. Maybe not the Council of Elvira. So what is it? Well, it took place in the city of Elvira, which is at or near the present-day city of Granada in Spain. It was attended by 19 bishops, including the celebrated Eusebius of Cordova. I'm sure there's probably a better way to pronounce that. They were all present along with 26 priests and deacons. So it's a fairly small council. It very well could have been the very first council to meet in Spain. Spain actually had quite a few councils. The council was a reform council. It didn't really deal much with dogmatics. It was mostly just canons trying to reform a bunch of abuses in the church. Now, the real interesting thing about the Council of Elvira is there's a dispute as to when it occurred. The dates range from 250 AD to 700 AD. But today, most scholars will place it roughly around the year 300, 306, somewhere in there. And you might think, okay, well, why is Elvira important? Because it didn't pronounce on dogma. Well, the answer is that all these disciplinary canons kind of gives us a picture of religious and ecclesiastical life in Spain in, you know, the early 400s, you know, the turn of the fourth century. So it deals with marriage, baptism, idolatry, fasting, excommunication, cemeteries, usury, vigils, frequency of mass, the relations of Christians to pagans and Jews and heretics. Lots of interesting little insights. And last week we had incredible author and apologist Rod Bennett on to talk about bad shepherds. In that program, we were kind of exploring that if you think things are bad in the church now, you need to read church history. Well, you know, these canons are worth reading because they kind of do give you an insight into, like, what was going on around the 300 in Spain. There is concerns about celibacy issues with the clergy. There is also, it clearly shows that there were nuns. You know, the institution of nuns was already very well familiar in Spain around the year 300. There's also Canon 36, which urged against the veneration of images. And scholars are kind of split on exactly why Canon 36 is there. Some of them, say that it could be a reaction or maybe a prohibition for underground churches not to use images because they're afraid that pagan converts would be confused or pagans would be confused about Christian worship. Others believe it's really more of they just didn't want people to lapse into idolatry. So as a precaution, this particular council kind of gave thumbs down to the use of images. And that's our early church father for today, Council of Elvira. Coming up next, we have Master Apologist William Albrecht coming into the dojo to talk about Islam and purgatory. You don't want to miss it, folks. Stay tuned.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. I actually forgot to mention, yes, the dojo is traveling out west. It's coming closer and closer, getting excited. It'd be nice to get a little weather, nice warmer weather, hopefully dry weather. I guess you guys are getting hit with some rain out on the West Coast. So, yes, the dojo is going west. I'm going to give a talk on February 20th. And anybody who's in Southern California, I'd love to see you. You know, stop by for the talk. I'm going to have a surprise for everybody. I'm going to have also my books and CDs and stuff. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Can't wait. Cannot wait. And speaking of can't wait, we have our next guest, who is William Albrecht. William Albrecht is a convert to the faith. He's also an international speaker and debater and has participated in over, get this, folks, over 50 live and moderated debates. William runs an awesome website that's dedicated to the early church fathers and includes unique translations, articles, commentaries, debates of the fathers. The website, you want to jot this down. Don't do it if you're driving, but you know, you'll remember, just patristicpillars.com. That's patristicpillars.com. William, welcome to Hands on Apologetics.
Gary, it is great to be on. Always a great pleasure.
Yeah, so you've been a busy person since the last time you were on the show.
Yes, that is correct. Yes, I have been quite busy, and I have been dialoguing a lot with individuals of the Islamic persuasion.
Yeah. Didn't you just recently have a debate? I can't remember if that was...
Yes. Yes. Yeah, actually, here's the interesting thing. I just debated this past Saturday on live radio against a Muslim scholar on the issue of veneration of images and icons.
Oh, wow. All right. That's interesting.
Yes.
It was a live radio. Was it Christian radio?
Yes, that is correct. It was Christian radio. Yes, that is correct. And I believe I should be debating the same scholar in maybe about 4 to 5 months, and that one will most likely be on Islamic radio.
Oh, wow. Awesome. That's yeah. Like I said, folks, William debates a lot. And the cool thing about that, William, is that, you know, when you're prepping for a debate, you really have to dig in deep to the issues, don't you?
Yeah, you really, really have to learn their position really well so that you don't misrepresent them or present any fallacies. And everybody that listens to your show would know very, very well, Gary, that fallacies, they're not good to present, because really we want to get down to the heart of the issue. We want to know what they're talking about, because if we're going to try to refute it and to present the ancient Catholic position, we better know what the opponent is teaching. We better know what they believe.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, we follow He who is the way, the truth, and the life. And far be it from us to say something that's untrue. You know, if there's any way to avoid it. Yeah, very good. So this brings up my next question. How in the world did you come up with this strange mix of purgatory and Islam? I mean, what an unusual topic. Did you debate this topic?
I have not. And interestingly enough, I don't think I would ever debate this topic with a Muslim, because they are so close to Catholicism when it comes to this teaching that really there wouldn't be a whole lot of substance in a debate against a Muslim. But I'm going to briefly tell you how did I come upon this. Well, I'm working on a book that I'm going to publish, God willing, soon, and it is on purgatory in Christianity. And in one of the chapters is going to cover what Islam views in terms of the afterlife, in terms of their version of what they would consider similar teaching to what we call purgatory.
Huh. Wow. It's a great topic, because I think most Catholics hardly know anything about Islam and Islamic thought and teaching. And, you know, in purgatory, Catholics are certainly familiar with that, but we're always told that purgatory is like an exclusive Catholic belief, right?
Right, right.
So it's cool.
Yeah, that's a good point there. And it really, honestly, it isn't, because if we delve into, if we look at what purgatory is, I mean, I'm pretty sure you know this quite well. Really, believing in a teaching of a purgatory has been there in the Christian faith from the very beginning. But then we can look, if we dig deeper and deeper, we find elements of that in ancient Judaism.
Yes.
So really, this is an ancient teaching. And we can see that in Islam, this was adopted, I believe, from all that I have studied. I believe that Muhammad took elements of the Christian view of purgatory and basically kind of, added his own little twist on that because due to the region that he was in, he didn't know Orthodox teachings that well. So he adopted what he could do to the best of his abilities. And, well, they have something that is very, very similar to what we would call purgatory.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess, the first place and the best place to start is to define what we mean by purgatory. What is purgatory?
Yeah, good question. The Catechism of the Catholic Church tells us what we need to know about purgatory. Really, the purgatory is the state of those who die in God's friendship, assured of their eternal salvation, but who still have need of purification in order to enter into the happiness of heaven. Because remember what Revelation says, and not just the book of Revelation, but the book of Hebrews, nothing impure can enter heaven. So the necessity to be purified sometimes can be there. And when we want to talk about purgatory, I like to call it the three main pillars of the teaching. Number one, if there is purification after death in this teaching of purgatory. Number two, the purification will either have pain or discomfort or both. And that is why the Bible in 1 Corinthians 3 talks about the punishment of suffering loss of the person. And the third pillar would be that God helps those that are undergoing this purification through the actions of the living. Because we have to remember, Gary, and I've heard you talk about it many times in your show, the body of Christ, the Christian faithful, are connected together as the written word and as the tradition of the church has always shown.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. So it's sanctification that occurs after death, and of course sanctification always involves suffering. Putting to death the deeds of the body that we may live. Right. Picking up our cross daily and following, and then the third one, as you pointed out, was that God, in a sense, allows the different members of the body of Christ to assist in the purification, the sanctification of others.
Yes, yes. And that is, remember, that's not something that as Catholics we've pulled out of thin air. We can get this directly from the teachings of Paul in 1 Corinthians. And then we fast forward to what does the book of Revelation show us? You look in Revelation and you see the choir in heaven, the saints in heaven and the saints on earth. And they're all communicating together in praise of the Lamb and praise of Christ, who is our Almighty God. So that imagery in and of itself, Gary, shows us that the body of Christ is connected together on earth and in heaven.
Right. Very good. And that's what Catholics call purgatory. And the funny thing is, William, and I know you know this, is that there are other people, people who follow Christ who believe the same thing essentially, but they don't give it the name purgatory.
That is correct. Yes,
like
yes.
The Orthodox, for example.
Correct. Yeah, and the Orthodox would agree with a lot of elements when it comes to the teaching of purgatory. A couple of the elements, they would not be on the same page that we are, but essentially they do believe in the teaching of purgatory.
Okay. Yeah, very good. Okay. So, like you said, this is a belief that's held in Judaism. It's held in Christianity. And now let's turn to Islam. I guess probably even before we jump into that, what exactly is Islam as you understand it?
Yeah, I know a number of people would maybe view it, I guess, maybe a bit different than I would, but I think that Islam is a rather late heretical Christian movement. We know that it was created by Muhammad in Mecca, but really, I think a number of the fathers would have defined it as a heretical Christian movement. The church fathers tell us that Muhammad was heavily, heavily influenced by Arianism and other offshoots of Christianity. We know this because of the documents, the writings that he borrowed from Gnosticism, certain teachings that we know that he adopted from Arianism. So, but here's the interesting thing, Gary, is that Muhammad, even though he really went off into an incorrect path, he did adopt many forms of orthodoxy. And when we say orthodoxy, we mean orthodoxy with a lowercase o in terms of correct teachings into his religion. So Muhammad couldn't read. He couldn't read or write in any of the biblical languages. But he did know about the ancient teaching of purgatory, because if you look in the Quran, you will find a number of passages where Muhammad does talk about a teaching which is very similar to our belief in purgatory. You can tell that he almost little, not word for word, but a little bit off, but he sounds a lot like he's taking from Paul in 1 Corinthians and a number of the teachings of the early church fathers, which, as we know, Gary, predated Muhammad by many centuries.
Wow. Yeah, I didn't. You know, just for our listeners, approximately when did Muhammad live? When was he born?
Yeah, Muhammad was born. We know for a fact that Muhammad was born in, I want to say, the middle or a little bit before the middle of the 600s. So his dates, if we look at the era that he comes from, it is rather late. So anybody that tries to look at, to try to put what I like to call ancient pedigree in his teachings, you know, you really, really can't find it there, because, you know, some scholars say that he died in, the early 600s. Some say that he was born around that time period. We don't know exactly, but we do know for a fact that Muhammad was situated in the 7th century. And just by hearing that term 7th century, Gary, that should really, alarm bells should really be going off, because that is rather late. The teaching of purgatory was well founded within the church already. We can find it in the Apostle Paul and in the writings of the early church fathers well before the 7th century. So we know when we read what Muhammad is telling us, what Islam is teaching, the Quran is teaching in regards to this this purgation, this suffering in the afterworld, we know that this was adopted from previous individuals that came before him.
Yeah, and just to give a roadmap of where exactly in time this is, one of the last early church fathers was St. John Damascene, right? And he wrote, he actually encountered Islam. He was in Damascus.
That is correct. Yes, he did. He countered it, and in fact, he is a very, very good source for any individual that does want to know about the landscape of Islam at that particular point in time. In fact, John of Damascus would have considered Islam an early heretical Christian movement as well. So we can find a lot in John of Damascus, and that is particularly why sometimes there is a little bit of confusion as to the dates of when Muhammad was active in his apologetics.
Got you. We're talking to William Albrecht about purgatory and Islam. And when we come back, we'll dive into that. So stay tuned, everybody.
This is Terry Barber inviting you, all the men, to a men's conference June 15th at the Sacred Heart Chapel. This is going to be a day where we're going to talk about true masculinity. You know, there's a problem in the Catholic Church today. We have very few men who love the Catholic faith. And I know a lot of the wives that I'm listening to right now are saying, I want my husband to be on fire for the faith. Send him to the men's conference. Your son, send him to the men's conference by going to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. That's June 15th. When your husband comes back from this conference, or your son, they're going to have a different view about their Catholic faith, because they're going to meet three men who love Jesus and his bride, the church, and are going to instill in them a love for Christ and his church, the Eucharist, Our Lady. Bring them to virginmostpowerfulradio.org. Sign up there or call 877-526-2151. Full sheen ahead.
It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
This is Jesse Romero. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda on Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
And welcome back, everybody. We are with our guest sensei today, William Albrecht, not only a master apologist, but also a great debater. And we're talking about purgatory and Islam. It's interesting. Islam, in fact, in my book, Hostile Witnesses, I note that there's lots of teachings in Islam that kind of mirror some Catholic doctrine about Mary. And so we're exploring how Islam also kind of mirrors some ancient teaching on purgatory. So William, where does Islam agree with the ancient Christianity on purgatory?
That's a great, great question, Gary. And if we look at the Quran, we can read of a place that is called Berzakh. And when we read of that, we can see incredible similarities to the Christian teaching on purgatory, because Berzakh literally means barrier. It means separation, obstacle that is in the way that separates one between heaven and hell. Kind of like a little, a mishmash of limbo / purgatory. So we know for a fact, we know that Muhammad borrowed from Jewish and Catholic imagery to define his doctrine of purification in the afterlife. And the reason we know that, because if we look at the foundational surah in the Quran, I'm going to read it to the listening audience. This is going to really stick out, because they're going to hear language that is very, very similar to what the Bible says. This is what the surah says. The fire, they shall be brought before it every morning and evening, and on the day when the hours shall come to pass, make Pharaoh's people into the severest chastisement. So the Quran heavily borrows from Paul's language in 1 Corinthians 3, as well as from the fathers. Another surah reads, so as to those who are unhappy, they shall be in the fire, for them shall be sighing and groaning in it. Now tell me what you think about that, Gary, but I think that sounds a lot like what Paul says in 1 Corinthians 3.
Yeah, that certainly does echo it a little bit. Yeah, why don't you go ahead, keep reading. This is, it's interesting. Now, this is from the Quran?
Yes, that is correct. This is from the Quran. So as we keep reading, remember what this says. This is talking about individuals in the afterlife that are going to undergo chastisements, undergo punishing. And what the Quran says is, there shall be fire, for them shall be sighing and groaning in it, abiding therein so long as the heavens and the earth endure. Except as your Lord please, surely your Lord is a mighty doer of what he intends. And as to those who are made happy, they shall be in the garden, abiding in it as long as the heavens and the earth endure, except as your Lord please, a gift which shall never be cut off. So when we look at what the Quran is saying, when we look at it, we can tell real clearly that first off, there's chastisement, there's punishment in the afterlife, and there are clear, remember, hold on, before I go to the clear differences, there is chastisement in the afterlife. There is clear similarity between what Paul is saying in 1 Corinthians 3, because Paul talks about suffering loss, and the Greek term there talks about actual punishment. Every time that is used in the Bible, that is talking about punishment. I mean, suffering loss in and of itself is punishment. So the suffering loss and the person that goes through the fire in 1 Corinthians 3, that language, that dialogue is clearly borrowed and clearly in the Quran, whereas there are differences there. You can clearly tell that was taken from what the Bible talks about in regards to purification of the individual in the afterlife.
Wow. That's, yeah, I have never been familiar with that. Of course. So clearly there is some sort of suffering. I guess it would be purification of some sort. Do they have a clear understanding of purification, the sanctification, or is this something different?
Yeah, I've got to say, when it comes to sanctification, they would define it very differently. But when it does come to purification, they are they're pretty much on the same page as a Catholic would be. They do believe that there is purification, that the suffering will purify the individual in the afterlife. And in fact, a couple of days ago, I spoke with Islamic scholar Murshidat Hussein, and he is the author of what is called the Majestic Quran. It is a brand new English translation of the Quran into English. And I spoke with him at length on this, and the languages that he used, and he told me to use for the listening audience, was he said that Islam would call purgatory kind of like a hospital for the sick, people that need purification, that need to undergo chastisements and punishments before they are prepared and ready for what they would call the heavens, heaven in the afterlife. So we can see a lot of similarities there. We haven't touched upon the differences yet, but talking about the meat and potatoes, there are a lot of similarities there.
Yeah, yeah. Is that the only portion in the Quran that speaks to this kind of purification, or is there other passages as well?
No, really, really good question. There is another very important one, and this one, the real important thing about this one, Gary, is that when the early and even the modern-day Islamic scholars, when they want to talk about this teaching of their version of what I would call purgatory, they always go to this text, and I'm going to read it for the audience. It says, and it is in Surah 124, "And whoever turns away from my reminder, he shall be a straitened life, and we will raise him on the day of resurrection blind." So here's a really, really interesting thing, Gary, is that Islamic scholars, including modern-day scholar, the one that translated the Quran to the brand-new English translation, Murshidat Hussein, pointed out that they interpret this, the term straitened, his shall be a straitened life, to be talking about punishment and death. So the Islamic faith does have that element of chastisement, of punishment. So the person that is punished is going to be raised in the afterlife, but here is where there's a divergence, Gary. The person is going to be raised blind. Blind does not mean literal blindness, but nevertheless, the divergence within Christianity and Islam shows clearly, because here the person is going to be raised, but he's going to be raised with ailments, with imperfections, and with physical problems.
Hmm. Yeah, that's a huge change. Because purification in a Christian sense is perfection, so that you're made whole, right?
And holy. That is correct.
Where here it's the punishment isn't medicinal per se. It's more of I don't know. How would you describe that?
Yeah, well, I would describe it as being a perpetual physical kind of punishment. And that is definitely a divergence from the ancient Christian belief, because I've done a lot of research on this. And if you look at what the fathers say, even what Paul says when he's talking about it in 1 Corinthians 3, when he talks about the man undergoing punishment but being saved, none of these individuals give the type of imagery that once a person has been purified, that they are still going to have physical problems or issues with their body, or continue in the sense of what to me this sounds like, Gary, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but this sounds like a sort of perpetual suffering even after they've undergone purification, and that would be a clear divergence from the Catholic teaching.
Yeah. Now I know this is kind of out of left field, so if you don't know the answer, that's fine. But that raises a question for me. Do Muslims understand the differentiation between soul and body, or is it they just see the whole person as like one, like a Jehovah's Witness, where the body's the soul, the soul's the body?
Yeah, it would be more along the lines of what the Jehovah's Witnesses define, and the one particular term, when you're talking about the soul in Islam, they don't like to use the term soul. They prefer to use the term spirit. And they would not define it in the same, and that is why they don't have a clear-cut definition of sanctification, which to me I think is a glaring, glaring problem in Islam. But that is where there is another divergence there, is that they really go off onto another path there. It really, really, even in both of the most popular, because we know that the most popular sects of Islam, that they're basically cut off into two. And really, even both of them don't seem to have a clear-cut teaching when it comes to the spirit, the body, or what they would call, or what we would call the soul and the body.
Yeah, yeah, because the purification that takes place after death is primarily the soul. I mean, it's because you're a disembodied soul. So
yes, that's
why.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's. I mean, if you look at ancient Shia and Sunni teachings, we can see that really, really, when we look at what their scholars say, when they talk about apparitions of individuals that are undergoing punishment, you can really see that the language is just so what I would call haphazard. But then again, you've got to remember one thing. I don't pretend to be a scholar when it comes to the Arabic language. So there definitely could be that barrier there. But nevertheless, that barrier is removed when we look at the exact language of their teaching. There's so much evidence of what they believe in regards to this doctrine that even if we say that there's a barrier in terms of the Arabic language, we know what they believe on this topic. And we know that even though they share many similarities, we do know that when it comes right down to it, as tough as this may sound, Muhammad just really didn't know a lot of Orthodox teachings. He adopted what he could have due to his region. But I mean, really, honestly, the Bible wasn't even available translated into his language in the region that he was from at that point in time. And that is probably why I believe that he had to take from Gnostic teachings that he heard from word of mouth, he adopted from here and there. And really, it does lead us to a lot more problems later on down the line.
Yeah, yeah. So that makes sense, because then it's kind of an amalgamation of different things. It's not really systematic and clarified, right?
That is correct, yes. And we know that it is a mishmash of a number of different faiths, because as you know very well, Gary, in the Quran, unfortunately, there are teachings that come directly from Gnostic writings that have been adopted. Muhammad adopted them as if they were dogmatic, followed by the early church, and really they were not. They were rejected.
Right. Very good. Well, hey, when we come back on the other side of the break, let's go into some of this Islamic teaching and kind of clarify matters. You're listening to Hands-On Apologetics. We're talking with William Albrecht. Stay tuned.
If you're a listener to Virgin Most Powerful Radio, you already know about Hands-On Apologetics with Master Apologist Gary Machuda. And if you're a fan of Hands-On Apologetics, then we have some exciting news for you. This February, Sensei Gary will be leaving the Apologetics Dojo in Michigan to visit the Virgin Most Powerful Radio World Headquarters in Covina, California. And if you'll be in Southern California this February, we have more exciting news for you. Not only will Gary be doing his live show from our Virgin Most Powerful Radio studio, but he will be giving a live presentation on February 20th at 7 p.m. right here at the Sacred Heart Chapel. That's Gary Machuda speaking live on the topic of Breaking the Bible Barrier, Why Catholic Appeals to the Bible Fail, and How to Make Them Successful. For more information, call 877-526-2151 or visit virginmostpowerfulradio.org. It is only because of your continued prayers and generous donations that Virgin Most Powerful Radio can broadcast live each weekday. We count on your spiritual and financial support because you understand the urgent need for Catholic programming that shares the gospel with clarity and charity, but without compromise. Please prayerfully consider becoming a monthly donor. You can set it up with the touch of a button on our website, CatholicRC.org.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Hands-On Apologetics with Gary Machuda. If you'd like to join the conversation, call 888-526-2151. Here's Gary.
And welcome back, everybody. We're talking with William Albrecht about Islam and purgatory, of all things. And William has just given us some surahs from the Quran that certainly sound a lot like what the early church taught about purgatory. So, William, like what you mentioned earlier, that the actual teachings in Islam actually make it much more clear. Let's go through that. I'm just going to let you go with it.
Yeah. When we talk about purgatory in Catholicism, in Orthodoxy, or even in other persuasions that do hold to similar beliefs, we do mean something different than what Islam believes. But Islam does believe in what they would call kind of like a middle state, and that is called Berzakh for them. That is a teaching very similar to purgatory, where in the afterlife there is purification, there is punishment to prepare this, what they would call the spirit, for the heavens. So, but if we look at what Islam would call, I guess, the fathers of Islam, they don't call them church fathers the way we call our early theologians and early philosophers church fathers. They would call them by different names, but for the sake of being on the same page, let's call them fathers of Islam. Okay. And they have a number of individuals that when they make comments on the passages of the Quran, we can see, much like Christianity, their foundational figures, when they provide commentary, they sound very, very similar to what the Catholic Church Fathers sound like. And I'm going to go ahead and read one of them. One of them, this individual's name is Ali bin Ibrahim. And when he's making a certain statement, he says, and he's making a kind of like a commentary on the Quran, he says, when the offspring of Adam, man, when man enters the last days of this worldly life, and the first one of the hereafter, his wealth and children and his works, his deeds, appear before him. And really, really, Gary, correct me if you think I'm wrong or if I'm reading into it, but I think the language resembles the good and the bad works laid before the person on Judgment Day in 1 Corinthians 3. What do you think about that?
Yeah, or the book of life is opened, you know?
Yes.
Perhaps. Something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I agree, yes. Yeah, I think the language is so similar. And, you know, we can really see that Islam has heavily copied the early Catholic Church Fathers. You know, even the language found in the great Hippolytus, who wrote several centuries before Muhammad, before any of the foundational figures in Islam, we can clearly see that his language is adopted by their early foundational figures. And I'm going to read one traditional quote, and this sounds so similar. The quote says, when this body enters the grave, two angels who examine every dead come to him in a fierce form, dragging their lengthy hair on the ground and tearing the earth with their teeth. Their eyes dazzle like lightning and their voice furiously roaring. They ask the body, who is your Lord? Who is your prophet? What was your religion? And this language is so similar to what Hippolytus of Rome tells us is purification in his commentary on the book of Daniel. It is shockingly very, very similar.
Yeah. Wow. That's really interesting. You got me there. I don't even know what to comment because...
Yeah. Yeah, and it's shocking, isn't it, really? I mean, so similar, because when we look at what Islam believes, when, you know, it's really they talk about their beliefs on good works or even on bad works, they believe, as we talked about earlier, that the departed spirits could visit their loved ones while on Earth. You know, their loved ones are still alive. So they believe that the spirits in their Islamic purgatory could ask that their sufferings be alleviated by communicating with angels. So, I mean,
really,
this is where I get a little bit confused, Gary. They're able to ask for intercession from angels, but they don't allow for intercession to be made from their version of purgatory, Benesach, with the living on Earth, but they can communicate with the angels, which is, again, just a logical disconnect there.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting.
I think it's just, it's incredible how there's so much similarity, but then you can really tell that Muhammad just, you know, he really, really got so much wrong. I mean, they do believe in intercession. They believe that intercession could alleviate the suffering of one in purgatory. But then again, their belief in intercession is, you know, that's a whole topic for a whole other day. That would differ as well. But I mean, the similarities are there. I mean, we can see that they're significantly there. Because if we look at a prominent, you know, cut me off if you want to ask a question or anything. I don't want to ramble.
Oh, no. No, I'm fascinated because I kind of ran into the same thing with my book where looking at Mary, you know, they come close. And there's these little tantalizing things that seem really square with the Catholic understanding of Mary. But then, you know, but there'll be dissimilarity as well. So I'm listening to you. I'm not... I probably should engage more, but please go ahead. You were going to mention a prominent scholar.
You're right there, though. I mean, just to briefly touch upon that, I mean, they believe in the Immaculate Conception, so many other teachings, but then, you know, then they disconnect when they deny the doctrine of Mary as Theotokos, of Mother of God. So really, we can see, you know, there's so much similarity, but then Muhammad just, you know, takes his own path in certain areas. But there is a prominent scholar. His name is Haji Nouri, and he quotes from a great scholar, Sayyid Muhammad. And I'm going to go ahead and read this. This is talking about the afterlife. 1 year after the death of his father, he saw him in dream and asked about his well-being. He said, "I was in punishment till today. I have just been released from punishment." The son asked in astonishment, "How can you become liable to punishment?" He replied, "I was supposed to pay Mashhadi Reza Saka for reciting the Holy Quran 18 times, which I forgot. I made the request that it should be paid. I was in punishment since I died. But yesterday, Mashhadi Reza forgave me, so I got relief." Sayyid Muhammad saw this dream, so he wrote to his brothers and asked them to find out if their father owed any debts that they should repay. So, Gary, we can see some very similar stuff here when it comes to intercession, but really, really very different from what we would consider because, you know, you don't see them asking for prayer or asking for a sacrifice to be made to help with to alleviate with the sufferings in purgatory. So there are clear differences, aren't there?
Yes. Yeah. Actually, that reminds me of the rich man and Lazarus.
Yes. That's correct.
You know, something similar to that where, you know, why else would he be telling about this punishment if it isn't to rectify his life? Yeah, you're right. I mean, I can see where there seems to be some really interesting parallels.
Yes. Yes, that's correct. And you know, I know we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I do want to touch upon that there is another thing in Islam that is, certain individuals have mistakenly said, well, you know what, that there's also something else called Araf. And isn't that purgatory? But really, Islam also has something. That's another place would be more similar to, I guess, limbo, if you will, the theological opinion of limbo than purgatory. So Islam does have different levels of, I guess, chastisement and I guess, punishment in the afterlife. But when it comes to Berezak would be the thing, the place, the teaching that most closely resembles what we would call purgatory. It isn't right on the mark, but it is very, very similar to what we would call purgatory.
And they would call what's roughly translated like a barrier, in other words.
Yes. Yeah, it's a barrier. It literally means a separation. And what does it do? Well, how does it separate? Well, it separates the spirit of the departed. It separates them from heaven. They would not call it heavenly glory the way we do, because they do reject the book of Revelation and that kind of language. But they would dictate that it does separate them between heaven, hell. It's like the middle kind of barrier. It does separate them from heaven.
Interesting. Yeah, so, real quick, we have about a minute or so. Kind of give us a recap. Like, where do we agree? Where do we disagree?
Yeah, well, we agree surprisingly a lot. So, really, if we look at Islam, we can see that Islam has borrowed from the historical truth of purgatory that has always been a belief in Christianity from the very beginning and can be traced to ancient Judaism. It can be found in the Old Testament and it can be found in the New Testament. Because remember what purgatory is. It is those that die in the state of God's friendship are assured of going to heaven, but they must undergo purification and punishment in before they enter into heaven. And purgatory, Berzakh, in Islam, is a suffering, a chastisement in the afterlife before the spirit can enter into heaven. But there are clear differences. The level, the form of intercession is very different. The way sanctification is viewed is different. And of course, the very fact that Jesus Christ shed his blood on the cross, our God and Savior died on the cross for our sins, we are given the grace of God to allow us to be able to suffer, to be punished before we enter into heavenly glory. That is very different because they do not accept Christ as their Lord and Savior. So that would be the biggest difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, William, well, hey, where can people get a hold of your stuff, find out what you're doing?
Yeah, people can go to www.patristicpillars.com. There they will find my blog, and they can find updates on all the debates, and I will be participating in a lot of talks and a lot of debates throughout the rest of 2019. So they can find a lot of stuff in the Church Fathers and a lot of stuff in debates there.
Awesome. Well, great, William. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. Look forward to being on again, Gary.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. All right, William Albrecht, ladies and gentlemen. Man, he's one busy individual, that's for sure. And talk about busy individual. We got some great guests coming up this week. We're going to talk to Brian Giesinger about his book, Power to Become Sons of God. Wednesday, Paul Thomas is going to throw down a apologetics Eastern Rite style. It's always great to have Paul on the show. And also Dr. Douglas Beaumont on Thursday. He's going to revisit the dojo. We're going to talk about Solo Fide. He's a wealth of knowledge, ladies and gentlemen. Can't wait. Great guest in store for you. And, man, it's hard to believe that it is time to shut down the Midwest Command Center. So, and turn off the dojo lights. We got to save energy, right? Anyway, coming up next, High Intensity Talk Radio, Catholic Style, with the Terry and Jesse Show. Don't want to miss it. And for me, it's time for me to turn off the lights here at the Midwest Command Center. I hope you have a great day, and thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the program. I'll see you tomorrow. God bless everybody. Bye-bye.
In the 1990s, I lived and worked in Hollywood. But when my wife Betty's mom took ill, we relocated to Orange County. And it was during this time in our lives that I converted to Catholicism. Once my eyes were opened to the truth, I couldn't learn enough about the faith. But I had less free time than ever, especially with a long commute. That's when I discovered the real value of Catholic audio. Listening to cassette tapes transformed my daily commute into a miniature retreat. And that's the beauty of Virgin Most Powerful Radio today. Since the podcasts are archived, you can listen anytime on our smartphone app. I know how listening to Catholic audio can bring you closer to Christ and His Church. So I encourage you to visit the App Store or go to vmpr.org and download the app today. It just might change your life. I'm Matthew Arnold for Virgin Most Powerful Radio.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio, sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.